Hello, and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper for October the 7th, 2022. Welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending October the 7th. Reading today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Andrew Parkinson.
Hello.
And Norma York.
Hello.
And I'm Noel Thorpe-Tracy. The headlines today are no donations fall for homeless charity, saddling up for a greener city, and numbers soar for food bank. So, may we have the first story, please, Nikki?
Which was donations fall for homeless charity. A charity that helps homeless people in Winchester is bracing itself for a challenging winter after its bills have rocketed and donations have dropped. The Winchester Beacon runs the night shelter in Jewellery Street with 10 bedrooms and operates a further three properties with a total of 12 rooms elsewhere in the city. It held its annual supporters event evening on Wednesday, September the 28th at Winchester College, where it updated supporters on its annual review. Fiona Gibson, treasurer, said that last year saw a drop in donations of more than £116,000. She also said that the charity is battling increasing bills, such as the centre's energy bill, which has risen by 124%. Ms. Price said, "That is concerning for the future. If donations continue to fall, as there are also cuts coming from council funding of £60,000 that could go towards three full-time night staff. With less staff there, it's less support." Sorry. Donations in 2020-21 were £356,820, but last year this dropped to £190,684. The centre saw its total income fall from £562,011 to £457,650. Despite this, the charity's total expenditure was £415,368, so it generated a surplus of £42,282, which will pay for refurbishment works at the Jewellery Street Centre. CEO Michelle Price said that despite the challenges of the past year, it has achieved its highest ever number of planned moves, with 85% of all moves arranged by working with the residents. She said this achievement was down to our hard-working staff team who patiently and tirelessly helped residents achieve their aims. "Looking to the future, we know our funding will be reduced by Hampshire County Council in 2023, but we continue to work in partnership with the City Council housing team and other local agencies so that together we can produce a pathway and route out of homelessness." Ms. Price said that demand for their services was so great last year that they received 164 referrals for help, but they were only able to accept 38%. They helped 63 people across their four venues, and residents had an average stay of 3 months. They also saw more than 700 visits to their Jewellery Street window for a whole range of services and support. The charity hopes to launch a fundraiser to pay for converting its communal shower area into separate cubicles to give residents privacy, and called on businesses to get involved with the work. It also called on people to support by either donating money, goods, or their time. Go to wcns.org.uk. Actually, it's a very long email address, which is really not worth repeating. Sorry.
And now Norma.
And I have got saddling up for a greener city. Hundreds of people saddled up to show support for the greener way of getting around Winchester. Cyclists from across the district filled the city streets with bikes on the morning of Saturday, October the 1st, when Cycle Winchester, a local community organisation campaigning to make Winchester better by bike, organised a 6-mass ride. Some 250 riders joined from 5 pick-up points across the city, converging on the central one-way system for a processional lap at to a backing of bike bells and music, finishing at the Abbey Gardens for a post-ride get-together. New this year, residents in Twyford and Colden Common organised their own feeder rides, which met main mass ride in Winchester shortly before the 10 a.m. start time, with more than 15,000 views on Twitter. A video of the carnival atmosphere was widely shared and drew praise from the cyclists. And there's a picture of a small number of the cyclists in Abbey Gardens and a couple of very young cyclists there as well, all looking very colourful.
And finally, Andrew.
Numbers soar for food bank. The local food bank saw double the monthly average of users in August amid the cost of living crisis. The main takeaway from Winchester Basic Bank's annual general meeting was how they could support people who had never had to consider the emergency charity before and to assure them that it's okay to seek help. Since Winchester Basic Bank opened in 2004, it has seen its breadth of users increase as more and more people struggle to make ends meet. Originally, the food bank would cater mainly to homeless people, but now around 80% of its users are families and includes people in employment. On Wednesday, September the 21st, staff, trustees, volunteers and supporters of the charity gathered at Winchester Vineyard Church to reflect on the past year and look forward to how they will manage through the ongoing economic crisis. In August, numbers using the charity soared back to peak pandemic levels with nearly double the monthly average of 432 clients on top of the school holiday program. The meeting was opened by Director and Chair Mike Whitehead, who passed on to the new patron, former Deputy Lieutenant of Hampshire, David Innes, who was appointed earlier this year. He said, "The work of Winchester Basics Bank is more important than ever. The pandemic forced all of us to look deeply into our own lives to see what we might be able to do to help those people who weren't so fortunate. In April 2021, the charity opened a sorting and storage site in Winnall to have a space away from clients to prepare for distribution. The site at Garber House was described as a great long-term step forward. The food bank has also expanded its home delivery services to make the service more accessible, and the school holiday lunch scheme now includes Christmas and Easter, as well as the summer holidays. Currently, WBB is working towards the harvest collections, which will take place all year round and not just the autumn. The contributing churches have been scheduled at different times within the year to keep a constant flow of donations. The charity continues to work with Ukrainian refugees, providing food and clothes, as well as supporting local food pantries at the Carroll Centre in Stanmore and Unit 12 in Winnall with the staples. Winchester Basics Bank has four collection hubs open at various points, Monday to Friday, including Winchester Vineyard Church in Bar End, Penton Place in Milland Road, St. Gregory's Church in Arlesford, and St. Barnabas Church in Week. And for more information, you can visit winchesterbasicsbank.co.uk for more details. And this article is accompanied by a photograph of the operations manager, Sam Watts, and trustee Lino Marnie. And they're preparing some of the basics ready for distribution.
And that concludes the headlines for this week. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our free recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. That's 01962 861 229. This number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. Now we will proceed with the death notices, Christian comment, letters to the editor, Belgarum editorial comment, first person, and the lighting up times. and then we'll continue with items of general news. So, here are the death notices. Can, George Can, on 16th of September, aged 95. Evans, Michael John Evans, aged 84. Fakima, Jennifer Paula Francis, peacefully at Berwick Court Care Home on Monday, 19th of September, aged 85. Glasspool, Susan Margaret, former Mayor of Winchester, on 17th of September. Miller, John Miller, at home on the 1st of September, aged 85. Rossi, Patricia Pat Rossi, peacefully at home on the 23rd of September. Thompson, Richard Henry Thompson, on 22nd of September, aged 86. Tilbury, Pete Tilbury, at home on the 20th of September. Unsworth, Jean Margaret, nay Cousins Unsworth, peacefully at home on September the 25th, aged 87. Williamson, Roy Williamson, peacefully at Home Park Nursing Home on September the 17th, aged 92 years. So, now we have Christian comment this week, written by the Reverend Philip Crinks and read by Andrew.
And this week's Christian comment is entitled Life Together. In 1935, the great German theologian Dietrich Bonhoeffer was a minister in two German-speaking churches in and around London. The reason for that was that he had had to leave Germany in 1933 after losing his campaign against the Nazification of Protestant churches. But in 1935, Bonhoeffer was surprised to find himself leaving London and going back to Germany. The reason that was that he'd been asked to lead an underground training college for pastors who would serve in the anti-Nazi confessing church, and despite all the risks, he agreed. For the next 4 years, Bonhoeffer personally taught and coached the student pastors. Sometimes they gathered, if they could, somewhere safe. At other times, he operated a seminary on the run, going from village to village to teach them as they ministered to people illegally. In 1939, the Gestapo shut down the seminary. At the same time, Bonhoeffer published a book called Life Together. It's a reflection on those extraordinary experiences. It is still in print. One of the most famous reflections on Christian community ever written. It challenges all Christian congregations and groups to live up to their high calling. Bonhoeffer challenges us to remember that Christian community and Christian community life is a joy and a privilege, a gracious anticipation of the last day when Christ will gather all to him. The visible fellowship of the church should be literally a foretaste of heaven. As we know, church communities often fail to live up to that. Still, we take them for granted at our peril. At the same time, community life must be shaped by truthfulness. It's all too easy for a community to base itself on some human fantasy or sentimental dream, by which the ego protects itself. Human as we are, we all enter a Christian community with ideas like that. But God's grace speedily shatters such dreams. God is not a God of the emotions, but the God of truth. To grasp God's promise, we have to let go of illusions and face reality. Otherwise, it appears that we love them more than what God has to reveal to us. Bonhoeffer also challenges any Christian community to understand itself to be part of the one holy Catholic Christian Church, sharing in the sufferings and struggles and promise of the whole Church. In particular, the exclusion of the weak and insignificant, the seemingly useless people, may actually mean the exclusion of Christ. In the poor, Brother Christ is knocking at the door. If the community is centred on the rich and the powerful, it is liable to meet only their needs. Or, if it meets others' needs, it does so only on their terms. Instead, a community is to be centred on Christ, and Christ is in fact most likely to be encountered in the poor and the marginalised, whose life only he is able to redeem and transform. If we do that, then the Christian community will find what we need to continue being the community which brings good news to the poor, powers night shelters, day centres, and basic banks, supports the integrity of creation, and supports carers and those in need. If we find ourselves doing that, it should not surprise us. Life together in Christ requires nothing less.
Thank you. Now, there are 8 letters this week, beginning with one read by Nikki.
From Andy Key, headed No to Both Roads. In your news story, An Act of Insanity, September the 29th, you report me as saying that it was vital that the old Andover Road was closed so it could become a major route for cyclists. That's not what I said at all. Speaking on behalf of local campaign group Cycle Winchester, I made it clear that we don't have a set view on whether Winchester Avenue or Andover Road would be the best through route into Winchester for motor vehicles. What we are concerned about is that the Kings Barton Residents Association is campaigning to keep both of them open to through traffic. Carla, the Kings Barton developers, are contractually required to pay for the stopping up of Andover Road and the creation of a walking and cycling route along the old road. That doesn't solve all the problems of Andover Road, but it's a big step forward in encouraging people to travel into Winchester without clogging the city streets with cars. If Andover Road is kept open, all bets are off. The money Carla promised to spend on closing the road doesn't magically become available to the council to do something else with. We could end up 2 busy roads dividing the Kings Barton community rather than one, and no decent, safe cycling and walking route. It's hard to see how that's good for Kings Barton residents. It's certainly not good for the rest of us in Winchester. Our view is that a decision to keep Andover Road open must go hand in hand with a fully funded plan for a safe, low-traffic environment along Winchester Avenue that actively encourages residents to get around on foot or by bike. That can only happen if you make sure that Winchester Avenue isn't a through route into the city for cars. And that's from Andy Key of the City Winchester Core Team. He's a member of the Core Team of Cycle Winchester.
And this is from Tommy Geddes, and it's entitled National Disaster. I'm a member of the Labour Party, but have many acquaintances and indeed some friends who are members of the Conservative Party. It saddens me to say that they, the Tory membership, have to accept responsibility for the disaster that is befalling our country. They elected Boris Johnson and then, learning nothing from that shambles, voted for Liz Truss. She and her Chancellor are simply extreme right-wing ideologues who believe that shrinking the state and leaving the economy to the markets, unbridled capitalism, will succeed despite all the evidence to the contrary. Even the then Chancellor Sunak told members exactly what would happen if they voted for Truss, a view shared by the majority of Tory MPs, yet still they voted for her, and within a few weeks, Sunak had been proved right. It's not difficult. An economy suffering from a rising inflation due mostly entirely to supply-side problems, staff shortages, partly due to Brexit, trade barriers, all arising from Brexit, COVID disruption, and then energy shortage due to the war in Ukraine. And what do Truss and Quartin do? Pile on even more inflationary pressures on the demand side with unfunded tax cuts for the rich and spiralling debt. You don't need a GCSE in economics to know that the outcome of that would be higher inflation, a run on the pound, leading to even more inflation through higher import costs, higher interest rates to counter inflation, a collapse in bond prices, hugely impacting upon pension funds, and to come inevitably a recession and probably stagflation. The Bank of England pulling in one of the direct seeking curb inflation, the government in exactly the opposite, fuelling demand. Conservative members were told all this by their own MPs, and still they voted for Truss like they voted for Johnson before, a known serial liar. These same Conservatives must own the unfolding disaster. It is of their own making and no one else's. They should hang their heads in shame. And that's from Tommy Geddes, Cannon Street, Winchester.
And bringing us back to a more local theme, our hot topic this week is, of course, the Andover Road. And this letter from Cathy Edwards is titled, I hope it's titled correctly, Put Cyclists Through Kings Barton. I travel along Andover Road twice a week to volunteer with St. John's Hand in Hand charity. It is a lovely drive and will be much improved for pedestrians once the new crossing is completed. So would reducing the speed limit to 30 miles an hour a bit further up the road. If there is a requirement for a cycling route into the city, why on earth can the route through Kings Barton not be promoted, well, once it's finished, thus satisfying Kings Barton residents and cyclists? And that was referred to in the Chronicle September 29th. Whilst I recognise there will be implications for conditions, etc., etc., relating to planning, is this too simple? And that's from Cathy Edwards, Test Rise, Chilbolton.
And from Simon Lever, headed Future of RAOB. On reading that a planning application has been submitted to build a five-storey development comprising in total six flats and a communal roof, in addition to a retail outlet, RAOB Club, Chronicle, September the 29th. First of all, five stories would be far too high, negatively imposing on the area. Secondly, I was one of the 1,000 individuals signing objections against a previous development plan presented by Alan Stone involving the destruction of the much-loved water garden off Colebrook Street. Should this five-storey development proceed, it would, in my opinion, have a negative effect on the area and its future, being close to the Silver Hill area. And that's from Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
And this is a list of rubbish. My beat is Oram's Arbour, approaches to and area around Winchester Station, Upper High Street, Clifton Terrace. Items picked generally within sight of a litter bin, drink cans often hidden under trees, food cartons and plastic cutlery, sandwich packaging, polystyrene takeaway trays, crisp bags, etc. Bottles of infinite variety, including a half full litre of gin. Broken / smashed bottles, obvious problem on the arbour with so many children playing there. Condoms, used and unused, tube of vaginal lubricant, a one-use barbecue placed obviously hot onto a litter bin and welded to it, female underwear, including a thong, a newly issued bank card, used laughing gas cylinders, train tickets, newspapers, used tissues, full nappies, and more. Why? Oh, why? Peter Moore from Winchester Litter Pickers, Alison Way, Winchester. Oh.
I'm not quite sure how to follow that, but never mind. Funnily enough, this one's titled Unimpressed, and it's from Ian Cross. And I think, as Norma just finished hers with why, oh, why, when we finish this letter, you'll probably ask, why? Anyway, Unimpressed. I've been booking badminton courts at Perrin School for Alsford Recreational Badminton on Thursday evenings for 5 years now. The group has been playing there on Thursdays for nearly 50 years. That's 50 years. I was booking courts for July, August and September back in June, and it turned out that September wasn't available. Shortly after that, I received an email from the school introducing the new facilities manager, which stated that there would be changes. Shortly after that, I received a rather abrupt email which stated that Bappington could, quote, from September, only be booked on Wednesdays, and you could only book the whole sports call. We normally book two courts, sometimes three. And the killer phrase was that bookings on days other than Wednesday would be rejected. A bit blunt, I thought, and very dismissive of a group that had been part of Perrins for nearly half a century. So, what's happening on Thursday evenings now from 6:30 to 8 o'clock since the start of September? And the answer is nothing. Footballers have always played after us, and they've told me that apart from one Thursday when the hall wasn't available at all, nobody has been using the hall. It would seem that our badminton group has been barred from playing on Thursdays, and it seems that it's preferable for Perrins to not have the sports hall used at all during that time. I'm not very impressed with this, and that's from Ian Cross of Sunhill Crescent, Alsford, and we look forward to the response from Perrins School.
And this is the editorial comment.
No.
I haven't got anything else. Sorry, you're going to have to block me out. Oh.
Hotel Hostel. I grew up in Winchester and have loved and been proud of my beautiful city and the Royal Hotel. In 1992, my husband and I were thrilled at the pleasure of staying there during the one chance I had of returning home. To read it was going to be used for asylum seekers really disturbed me. Their situation is awful and my heart hurts for them. That said, the Holiday Inn is not historical, but the Royal Hotel is. I am so very happy with the decision to treasure it as such. A beautiful hotel. And this is from Diane S. Harris, Nee Lockyer, Sentinel Ridge, Marietta, GA 30064, USA.
And our final letter is from Judith Martin, and it's entitled The Power of the Press. Hurrah for the power of the local press. Now, Belgarum's role in life is to be a little bit irrelevant. In fact, she or he, because we're not quite sure what it is, often are not enough. But the intervention on the lost M&S shortcut, which was in September 29th, has had an impact. I'm happy to see that the doors are open again, but there's a serious point to be made here. I can only think of three high street shops that have readily accessible doors on more than one side. M&S, WH Smith, and Boots. Now, happily, Boots still use theirs onto the square, although it has steps there. High Street Waterstones only briefly used theirs onto St. George's Street, and it's not accessible because it went straight into a flight of stairs. And Superdrug have never used theirs. When the world stopped for the pandemic, shops and the council spent a lot of money telling people which side of the road to walk on and what distance to remain apart. But no one, as far as I know, when essential stops could reopen, thought to work out proper one-way systems that meant you entered one door and exited another that wasn't alongside. Germany, in particular, realised that fresh air and ventilation was a good idea, and eventually even the UK government did, urging people to open windows. But M&S and Smith's, despite having one indoor and one outdoor, closed the obvious side doors. M&S in particular made a hash of distancing and ventilation by ensuring that customers leaving the tills had and still have to double back alongside the queues in order to get out. And ditto for the post office, with its pinch point entrance, although not for the rest of Smith's. I've already taken up the offer of my fourth COVID shot, suggesting the government and or the NHS is sufficiently concerned about the coming winter and a mutating virus to spend a great deal more time and money into protecting the public. Shops that have through routes for ventilation and for customers should simply be obliged to use them. If, as Belgaram says, the doors are closed for security reasons, perhaps they could stretch to some more members of staff. After all, the last M&S chairman left with a goodbye present of £2.6 million. And that's from Judith Martin, Romsey Road, Winchester.
And thanks to all the correspondents. You can contact the Hampshire Chronicle at any time by writing to 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO238AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO238AL. Or by phone on 01962 860 836. 01962 860 836. So now, Andrew has Belgaram, an alternative look at the news.
And following on from the success of the last letter, complimenting Belgaram, here we are with this week's Belgaram, an alternative look at the news. And this has two articles, The International and Brutalist Wonders. Winchester is not usually a city heralded for its modern architecture. Usually anything designed after 1900 is the butt of criticism. However, Southampton-born architectural writer Owen Hatherley has highlighted two buildings in his door-stopping 609-page Modern Buildings in Britain, which was published last year. Mr. Hatherley was enchanted by the 1964 School of Art building on Park Avenue, built in the, quote, international style. A delightful and little too known building. It isn't even listed, though it would have been decades ago were it in London or Cambridge. Also in the book is the Law Courts, completed in the early 1970s, and described by Mr. Hatherley as a somewhat sombre medieval brutalist building, although a very well-crafted one, with its rhythm of sandstone, boxed-out windows, and a heavy, rough and knobbly concrete aggregate that blends well with the surrounding Gothic and neo-Gothic buildings, without being patronising or arse-kissing. Certainly vastly preferable to the tedious, thin-lipped architectural troryism of the county hall nearby. Well, that was complicated. And the next article, which is a wonder of Winchester, are our bollards, and the beautiful bollards get a fresh lick of paint. And I think the Winchester bollards are absolutely fantastic. Anyway, beautiful bollards that make Winchester City Centre a prettier place to have been getting a fresh lick of paint. There are 25 bollards in the square, which carry versions of famous art, including work by Picasso and Da Vinci. Rachel Alexander from the Colour Factory has been busy this week touching up the artwork after some of it became worn or chipped. And she said, "They always put a smile on people's faces. It's our favourite project, and we've been running it since 2006. We're always on the lookout for new sponsors and new bollards. We are bollard crazy." And that's accompanied by a picture of, I guess, Rachel with her paints, etc., and she's titivating one of the bollards.
And now it's Norma with the first person, which is by Joanna Lewis.
And is entitled Frack Off. My intention to keep the central heating off until November the 1st did not go to plan. In that recent cold snap, I gave in and had a blast. That deep chugging noise, as if from the bowels of a large steamship, was at first reassuring. the sound of pipes and boiler stuttering and spluttering in awkward dialogue again across the chilly copper expanse was a sound of whales communicating through the frozen deep. It was comforting in a primordial way. But then I reached for the off switch. Was it the fear of the bloated radiators? Was it the sight of an even more bloated Botox-filled Putin dancing in the jig of the mad dictator who believes his policy of turning off the gas is destabilising Western democracies? None of the above. It was because now I was generating vast amounts of my own heat over reading about the new government's energy policy. The word government here being used very generously. I found myself doing a very good impression of a nuclear reactor over the issue of fracking. Fracking will hit Hampshire hardest. As the Chronicle announced last week, Truss's U-turn on the banned practice means our county faces the prospect of 9 new fracking sites, equivalent of nearly 35,000 football pitches. Winchester is most at risk. 5 areas, given the potential go-ahead, represent more than one quarter of the constituency. I hope many of you reading this generate your own thermal underwear moment in anger. For why would any sane person seek to extract oil and gas from the subterranean ecology of the earth in an area which scientific experts have judged to be unsuitable? It is hard to fathom. Fracking anywhere, but especially here, risks earthquakes, subsidence, the release of noxious gases, contaminating the water supply, and chemical poisoning. It threatens the very ecology, geology that keeps this planet from being like other planets, lifeless. Is it just tactical? A distraction? Announce a U-turn on environmental issues that is so extreme it will draw out active protests from all sorts of groups and individuals that frighten Truss supporters. Tree huggers, the Greens, students, Extinction Rebellion, Druids, people who go to festivals, Greta Thunberg and Swampy 2.0, horrified by the sight of clashes with the police and so much rainbow-coloured home knits and purple tie-dye, is the crude political hope, then, that hardcore supporters will not seek to oppose the tearing up of planning and wildlife protection laws in 38 designated investment zones. These proposals include liberalising the habitat regulations, which protect some of the most vulnerable wildlife and green spaces in England from developers. Also, it involves scrapping the environmental land management scheme. This paid farmers to manage land in ways that benefited wildlife and the environment. The RSPB, World Wildlife Fund and National Trust are all in agreement. This is an attack on nature. We are on war footing. Bird binoculars to the ready. Or is this madness simply a sign that many a government accept that they are unlikely to be voted in again? Are they helping their friends and sponsors, including those from the building industry, in the hope of crushing consultancies if they lose their jobs? The Chancellor, for example, hosted a big party last week where his hedge fund manager fraternity was invited. Privately, they called him that useful idiot, whilst making millions from the ensuing chaos and in the financial markets, from exchange rates and government bonds, chaos which they had a hand in. We must do what we can to make local subspecies of Homo greedicus live the implications of their selfish actions and take action. No fracking, no more large housing developments, no more destruction of green spaces, prison for developers who cut down protected trees, not fines. Our local natural resources are infinite and are not dispensable. They are all in peril. And that was by Joanna Lewis. Good for her.
Yes.
And now Nikki really does have editorial comment.
Oh, at last, here I am. headed, Looming Crisis for Winchester Charities. Worrying news for the local charity sector. Two of the district's most important organisations, the Basics Bank and the Beacon, have reported mounting financial pressure caused for the latter by the soaring cost of energy. It is a double blow, not only hitting their operating costs and donations, but also driving up the number of people who need their services, especially for the Basics Bank. These charities have been vitally important since the financial crisis of the late 2000s, which saw a sharp reduction in spending by national and local government and a reliance on the charity sector. The shortfall was never addressed in the 2010s, and now, post Putin's invasion of Ukraine, the financial pressure is becoming even more severe. Our news stories this week highlight the impact on two of the biggest charities, but the problem goes across the whole sector. The government has rightly helped individuals, but it needs to be prepared to give help to charities too.
Lighting up times, today, Friday, October the 7th, the sun will set at 7:15 p.m. and tomorrow, Saturday, the sun will rise at 7:16 a.m. and set at 6:29 p.m. On Wednesday the 12th, the sun will rise at 7:23 a.m. and set at 6:20 p.m. Now we have items of general news, starting with one read by Nikki.
Which is headed, College Proposals for New Female Boarding Houses. Winchester College has announced proposals to develop two new boarding houses solely for girls on land off St Cross Road. The plans, which will be subject to a public exhibition early next month, come as a result of girls being admitted to the college for the first time in its 640-year history. It is proposed that the new facilities would be built in the southwest corner of Kingsgate Park, replacing the existing sports pitch. The college would also establish a new all-weather sports pitch in an adjacent part of the park, alongside extensive landscaping. The unveiling of the plans follows many months of preparatory work, including pre-application discussions with Winchester City Council's planning department and an extensive site selection process. On reaching this conclusion, the college took account of a previous planning approval for boarding house provision in this location. The college's headmaster, Dr. Tim Hands, said the admission of girls to the college earlier this month, for the first time in our long history, marked a major step forward. We are delighted that these girls have integrated well into our school sixth form as day pupils. However, we must also provide girls with the opportunity to board should they and their families so wish. Separate facilities are therefore required. Remarkably, the college has not built a new boarding house since before the First World War. Because of the significance of this change, we have taken the time carefully to develop proposals which would sit comfortably alongside the college's existing heritage assets and the history character of this part of Winchester. I hope that local residents take the time to visit the exhibition and find out more about the plans. With the proposed new sports pitch forming an integral part of the scheme, the college's director of sport, Mark Burley, said this new facility would significantly boost the college's all-year provision for outdoor sports. By establishing a flexible all-weather surface pitch with appropriate lighting to enable early evening use during the winter months, we will be able to cater for a wider range of sports. Alongside our new PE centre, which is set to be completed next summer, this new facility will provide a much enhanced recreational offer to local residents, community-based clubs and other educational institutions. The public exhibition will take place at St Michael's Church on October the 7th, 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. and October the 8th, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m.
Call to help kids in need. Hampshire organisations are being urged by the council to help provide food and activities for children in the holidays, reducing financial hardship for families. Hampshire County Council is looking to identify more organisations that can help families struggling with the cost of living across the county, calling for them to apply for a place on the list of approved holiday activities and food, HAF, programme providers. The HAF programme provides enriching activities and healthy food to some of Hampshire's most vulnerable children during the Easter, summer and Christmas school holidays. The programme is set to enter its third year and is inviting applications for HAF schemes in 2023. Hampshire organisations, voluntary and community groups have from October the 3rd until November the 4th, 2022, to apply. To help, the council is hosting online information sessions for potential HAF providers during October. Organisations already on the HAF framework do not need to reapply. Deputy Leader of the County Council and Executive Lead Member for Children's Services, Councillor Roz Chadd, said, "At a time when children might otherwise go without, the HAF programme ensures that children continue to have fun, learn and eat healthily and socialise with their peers, and none of this would be possible without the hard work and dedication of Hampshire providers. I would strongly encourage any organisation looking to make a positive impact during these most challenging of times to apply for a place on our network of approved providers."
And a former Michelin star restaurant has closed. A much-loved former Michelin star restaurant welcomed diners for the final time, as it's now set to close its doors for good due to soaring energy prices. The Black Rat in Chesil Street held its last ever service on Friday, September the 30th, as the curtain fell on its time in the city after a 15-year journey. Owner David Nicholson said, "It went very well indeed. It was all very smooth. Of course, it was very sad, but it worked. Myself and the staff had a few drinks afterwards to say goodbye. Then we shut it down and that was it. We were fully booked, as we have been for the past month or so. The response from our diners was good. I think people were sad to see it go. We're one of those restaurants where lots of people love it and some people hate it. It's the end of a chapter, but hopefully not the end of the story." Mr. Nicholson, who also runs the Black Boy Pub, the Black Bottle Wine Bar and the Black Hole Bed and Breakfast, told the Chronicle last month that he was facing an increase of up to £80,000 in his energy bills. And he said the restaurant also struggled with staffing issues and hikes to overheads such as wages and food prices. Despite having to close, Mr. Nicholson said he has happy memories of the Black Rat and didn't rule out coming back in the future. "It's been 15 years of really good fun," he added. "The staff and the customers were excellent, and we achieved what we set out to do with it. And eventually, these things have to come to an end." The restaurant, which lost its Michelin star ranking in February 2021, has retained a place on the coveted guide, but the announcement of its closure on Monday, the September the 5th. A Facebook post read, "It's been a blast, but all good things come to an end. With a heavy heart, the Black Rat is closing its doors for the final time at the end of September." And below, instead of the usual food pics, are the people that made it all possible over the past 15 years. The guys who worked their hardest to create amazing menus, provide the best service, and make the Black Rat what it was. "We'd like to thank all of the customers who supported us from the start, and particularly those who braved our unusual menus, lamb heart, brain, horse, or wood ants, anyone, and became not just regular customers, but also friends. You will all know who you are, so I won't embarrass you, but we'll miss you terribly. Keep well, eat well, and support local business, and thank you all from the bottom of our hearts." And that was a Facebook post from Gareth, Erica, Jose, Ali, Nick, Sherpa, Matt, Dave and Sam. And that post received more than 100 comments and 30 shares, showing its reputation in Winchester. And the article, I suppose like the Facebook posting, is accompanied by a picture of the gang. So all the people there on the staff on the last day All very sad.
Delight as beaver gets protection in new law. Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust is celebrating as beavers are now officially recognised as a native species in England and a European protected species. The new law, which came into force at midnight on October the 1st, will better protect beavers. The Trust says they are a key to creating thriving wetland ecosystems, which are critical for climate adaptation and providing a wealth of benefits for nature and people. The change in legal status will make it an offence to deliberately capture, kill, disturb or injure beavers or damage their breeding sites or resting places without holding the appropriate licence. Izzy Tween, Beaver Recovery Project Officer at Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust, said, "We're delighted that beavers have received European Native Species Protected status. This new legislation gives the beavers already thriving in England recognition as native animals, a status they have held in Scotland since 2019, and will bring their level of protection in England in line with those north of the border. While any unwelcome beaver activity can still be managed under Natural England licensing, this protection will help our small and vulnerable population of this industrious ecosystem engineer to establish and create wetlands to help boost biodiversity and deliver ecosystem services for local communities. Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust aspire to release wild beavers on the Isle of Wight as a key part of its vision to support nature's recovery on the island and create a wilder Wight. The Trust launched a public consultation in February 2022, mailing a questionnaire to every home on the island asking residents for their views on a potential release of the aquatic mammals in the eastern Yarra Valley. A total of 4,883 people responded to the consultation, with 89% stating they felt positively about beavers being released on the island. Following the public consultation, the Trust hopes to submit a licence application, which is needed for any beaver release in the UK, to Natural England. Currently, though, Natural England is not accepting licence applications while it works with DEFRA to finalise the National Beaver Strategy after running its own public consultation last year. If the Trust's eventual licence application is successful, it's hoped the first beavers could be released on the island by 2024. Eurasian beavers are a native species throughout Britain and were once common before relentless hunting for their meat, fur and scent oils drove them to extinction by the 16th century. Conservation efforts have allowed the species to make a remarkable recovery. Wild populations are now thriving in Scotland and several counties in England, including Devon.
Doctors offer longer hours. Three doctor surgeries in the city are collaborating to extend their hours. Friars Gate, St Clemens and St Paul's Surgery have worked together to create Winchester City Primary Care Network, PCN. That has been taken over evening and weekend primary care at Badgers Farm Surgery from October the 1st. The new service hours will be from 5:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. Monday to Friday and 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Saturday at Badgers Farm Surgery, Badgers Farm Road, Winchester. The workforce will be providing an additional 58 clinical hours per week above the core primary care contracted hours. The service is an extension to what's offered by people registered GP practice. Following feedback from the local patient population, the access service will provide routine GP appointments, long-term condition reviews, proactive screening and assessments, adult and childhood vaccinations, contraception clinics, musculoskeletal physio assessments, pharmacists, medication reviews, phlebotomy, blood taking, appointments. The local PCN manager said, "We plan to provide continuity of patient care and greater accessibility for availability and a broader range of appointments, as well as an increased volume of GP appointments. Patients will notice that they are offered more appointments outside of core working hours. To make appointments for one of the services listed, call your own GP practice and ask to be seen in the enhanced access service if the extended hours are more suitable. For more, go to winchestercitypcn.co.uk.
Residents back 20 mile per hour zones. Twyford residents have joined calls for 20 mile per hour speed zones to be introduced in Hampshire amid fears that the village is being left in the backwater. The County Council's current policy restricts new 20 mile per hour zones and limits, leaving many parish authorities unable to act, even if they stump up the funding. However, the council has recently finished conducting a survey with a view to changing its stance. In the meantime, 20's Plenty for Us, which is a not-for-profit organisation which has nearly 600 groups campaigning to lower the limit, has continued to gather pace. In Twyford, representatives of the movement have identified several roads which they say are danger spots. Councillor Tony Bronk, alongside Dr. Hannah Greenberg, who formed the Twyford 20's Plenty group, have been lobbying civic chiefs to lower the speed limit in Queen Street, Finch's Lane and the High Street. They have raised concerns about the lack of signage, safe crossing points and the absence of pavements. While they've had some joy implementing small improvements such as road markings to deter parking, their efforts to slash speed in the village have been largely fruitless. Dr. Greenberg said, "We are dominated and divided by that road, which is the B3332. There are elderly people on the south side of the village who tell me they haven't been able to cross in 3 years because it's simply not safe to do so. The whole point of living in a village is being part of a community, but so many people are being cut out of that. The danger of being hit at 20 instead of 30 is like falling from the first floor of a building compared to the fourth. Not everyone would obey the limit. We're not naive enough to believe they would. But every 1 mile per hour less reduces collisions by 6% and increases the chance of survival." Councillor Edward Heron, Hampshire County Council's transport chief, said, "Our survey regarding 20 mile per hour speed limits is now closed. And I would like to thank all of the residents, parish councils and other stakeholders that took part. We received around 9,500 responses and are currently undertaking the task of analysing the feedback. As part of our wider review, the findings from the survey, together with data about how the highway network is currently used, enforcement, road safety, previous 20 mile per hour speed limit implementation, and the associated environmental impacts will help shape future decisions relating to 20 mile per hour speed limits." And the article is accompanied by a photograph of Councillor Tony Bronk at the High Street crossing in Twyford. And for those of you that know the Twyford area, it is quite a narrow road and really does divide the village.
Care home to close amid rising costs. A Winchester care home is due to close after its owners decided the increased running costs were too high. Berwick Court Care Home in Berwick Road is operated by HC1, which has decided that the home will have to close due to difficulties in staff recruitment and rising costs. The home has 39 beds that offer residential, nursing and dementia care. A spokesman for HC1 confirmed that the home would be closing, which means the residents will have to start looking for alternative accommodation. The timescale for the closure is currently unknown, as is the future of the building. The spokesman said, "Against the backdrop of the cost of living pressures and increased costs of running the home, we have made the decision that it is in everyone's best interests for us to consolidate our services in the local area. After carefully considering all our options, we have therefore sadly concluded that it is in everyone's best interest for us to plan to close Berwick Court and for residents to be supported by other homes in the local community, including our nearby Chandler's Ford home. We are working closely with Hampshire County Council and are supporting our residents, their loved ones and our colleagues through this process. We will only move forward with the closure process as it is safe to do so and when our dedicated project team has supported every resident to find suitable alternative care arrangements. Once the home has been safely closed and each resident has been supported to find suitable alternative accommodation, we will begin moving forward with the sale of the property. Until that point, we do not know who the purchaser will be or what their plans may be for the future of the property. We are pleased to have delivered great care at Berwick Court, as evidenced by our current good CQC rating. However, for some time now, due to specific local factors affecting this home, we have struggled with the recruitment and retention challenges that impact the whole care sector. Despite our best efforts, the recruitment challenges we face have limited the number of residents we are able to support at this time. Until the timeline for the closure is confirmed, it will continue to operate as normal.
Demolition approved for church. A Winchester church has received approval for closure and demolition from the Parochial Church Council, the PCC. For a number of years, it has been apparent that the church, St Luke's Church in Mildmay Street, has been suffering from a number of major building defects. A report commissioned by the Diocese of Winchester in May this year confirmed that addressing these repairs would incur substantial costs and would be a significant ongoing burden to the congregation for many years to come. After much discussion, the PCC has confirmed that they will seek closure and demolition of the church in order to build a new fit-for-purpose replacement. The Acting Bishop of Winchester, Bishop Debbie Selin, said, "As we seek to serve the parish of Stanmore in the decades to come, we want people to know that they can get to know Jesus in their new church building. We look forward to the new church continuing to be the beacon of hope that St Luke's has been, to continuing to bring the presence of Christ to one of the most diverse communities in Winchester. St Luke's Church holds many significant memories for the people of Stanmore, stretching back three generations to 1960-61. The church wardens would like to welcome all who have connections from the past with St Luke's to come and share their memories with the current worshipping community." Curate Marianne Foster said, "The current St Luke's building is a special place for many people. As we look ahead to the future and plan for a new St Luke's, I am hopeful that it will be a loving and welcoming building where people will discover joy and connection. The Parochial Church Council will be working with the Diocese of Winchester and local stakeholders and the planning authorities of Winchester City Council to determine how the site can be developed and a new church built. The building remains structurally safe to use in the immediate future, and a date closure will be announced in due course. The usual pattern of services will continue during the building project, and to view the schedule, go to stlukeswinchester.co.uk. St Luke's forms part of the parish of St Luke's and St Mark's, serving the communities of Stanmore, Oliver's Battery, Badgers Farm and Winchester Village."
Council quizzed on £3 million pavilion costs. Civic chiefs have been quizzed over their plans to splash an enormous budget on the new pavilion at King George V playing fields. The Chronicle recently reported the cost of the facility was set to increase to £3.3 million. That's £1 million more than originally costed in March 2021. The pavilion will replace two decaying buildings at the Highcliffe Recreation Ground, and approval was given last November. One of the existing pavilions has already been decommissioned by Winchester City Council. However, soaring inflation costs within the construction sector has seen all of the companies tendering for the project significantly up their prices. Despite this, the council wants to press ahead with the scheme and has requested the additional capital spend to be allocated. Speaking at a City Council Cabinet meeting on Thursday, September the 22nd, Councillor Caroline Horrell raised her concerns. She said, "What a fantastic project it is to rebuild the pavilion and improve our health and well-being facilities, especially right next door to Winchester Sport and Leisure Park. It's one I strategically support wholeheartedly. However, this is an enormous budget. Does it have to run to £3.3 million? And have we looked at other alternatives?" Graham Todd, a corporate property surveyor for the City Council, said the current plans for the pavilion met the usage criteria for large contributors, such as the Football Foundation and the Cricket Board. He added, "We did consider redesigning the pavilion to make it smaller, but the cost of redesign and submitting a further planning application would add up. Costs of construction are only going to rise the longer we delay." Hampshire's largest female-only football club, the Winchester City Flyers, were cited as a key reason as to why the council is so keen to progress with the project. The authority said, "It's vital all of its members, which is some 500 or so, have a safe place to change and enjoy the sport off the back of the Lionesses' Euro 2022 triumph." Councillor Kelsey Learney said, "A significant number of companies tendered, all of which increased their costs. I understand the increase we have seen is in line with other companies are seeing on their capital projects. All the while we delay, our existing facilities are getting worse. As previously mentioned, women are easily put off sport, and the facilities we currently have are enough to do that alone. It's important we do this now instead of waiting for some rabbit to come out of a hat." And the article is accompanied by an artist's impression of how the new pavilion would look, which is probably in line with one of our other comments about architectural merit. It's not going to win too many prizes.
That's your opinion. Now I'm on to animals here. Again, much maligned moth, key to other species' survival. When you think of a moth, what comes to mind? An image of a small, beige, insignificant insect, perhaps. For whatever reason, moths get a bad reputation. One survey found that over two-thirds of people in the UK have a negative opinion of moths. They are often overshadowed by their showier butterfly cousins, yet moths can be just as beautiful, if not more so. Just take the small elephant hawk moth, with its bright pink fur, or the striped Jersey tiger moth. Not all moths have to be bold to be beautiful, though. Some stand out for their mimicry. The lichen button moth hides in plain sight with its incredible imitation of lichen-covered tree bark, while the common plume moth rests with its wings tightly rolled, resembling a twig. Moths are not only beautiful and misunderstood, they are also numerous. Around 59 species of butterflies exist in the UK, compared with over 2,500 different moth species. Each one is perfectly adapted to its environment, like the broad-bordered bee hawk moth, which mimics bumblebees to protect itself from predation. Or the hummingbird hawk moth, which can beat its wings up to 80 times per second to help it dart from flower to flower, collecting as much nectar as possible. Unfortunately, moth numbers are declining across the UK, and in the south of England, populations have fallen by 40% in the last 50 years. But why does this matter? Moths are hugely important in the ecosystem. They are vital pollinators, with several plant groups relying solely on moths for their pollination. Some moths are more mobile even than bees and can carry pollen further, allowing plants to spread far and wide. For many animals, moths are also a crucial food source. Night flying moths are a favourite food of bats, while moth caterpillars provide sustenance for the growing chicks of robins, blackbirds and wrens. The decline in moths has negatively impacted other species. Reduced bat numbers over farmland, for example, is linked to reduced moth numbers caused by intensive farming and increased use of pesticides and herbicides. The Wildlife Trust regularly monitor moth species on its nature reserves to determine the presence of rare and declining species. Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust nature reserves support several important moth populations, including the reddish buff moth. This species used to be common across the south coast, but a single reserve on the Isle of Wight is now the only place these extremely endangered moths can be found. This underlines the importance of the Trust's monitoring and conservation work.
The Adventures of Alice in Wonderland. The Adventures of Alice in Wonderland is coming to the Theatre Royal for 5 days in October. The classic story will take the stage from Monday, October the 24th, as the production that views the Lewis Carroll tale from a different perspective. The Adventures of Alice in Wonderland asks the question, what if a stranger entered your world and caused nothing but chaos? The play is brought to the stage by Wise Owl Theatre Company, which creates theatrical productions and immersive performances for venues and events, and produced by the company's founder, Christopher Brooks, with puppetry design by Matthew Forbes, Associate Puppetry Director of the National Theatre Award-winning production War Horse, and now performing in The Lion King. Don't be late to leap down the rabbit hole this autumn to meet your favourite characters, including the fearsome Queen of Hearts. The Adventures of Alice in Wonderland will be at the Theatre Royal Winchester from Monday the 24th to Wednesday, October the 26th at various times. Recommended age 3+. For more information or to book tickets, visit the theatreroyalwinchester.co.uk or call on 01962 840 440. That's 01962 840 440.
And for somebody that's got a bit of time and is looking to volunteer, the Climate Group is looking for a new leader. An environmental group has issued a call to action for a new leader to help steer the fight against the climate emergency. Winchester Action on the Climate Crisis, which is called WINAC, is looking for a new chairman to help spearhead their work in the district. WINAC's work and influence has grown over the last 18 months. Their We Can project supports people in towns and villages across the district to run their own climate projects. Super Homes helps homeowners make their homes more energy efficient and greener. Action groups support initiatives to make Winchester's public spaces more enjoyable by reducing traffic blight, to make more renewable energy, and to reduce the impact of food on the planet. The role offers the opportunity to make a real difference, helping to shape the charity's campaigns and services in and around Winchester. There couldn't be a more important time to act on the climate crisis, said the former chair, Chris Holloway. The UK heatwave this summer and flooding and wildfires across the world has made local people even more aware of the urgent need for action. And WINAC supports people to create real, lasting change. And if anybody's interested in there, then more details are available on the WINAC website at winac.org.uk/WINAC chair.
Deaths following police contact. Dozens of people have died following contact with Hampshire Constabulary over the past 5 years, new figures show. The figures come as the Police Action Centre warns that police need to be better trained in de-escalating difficult situations. Every year, the Independent Office for Police Conduct releases figures on the number of deaths following contact with police forces in England and Wales. They show between April 2017 and March of this year, 27 people died after contact with Hampshire Constabulary, including two in 2021-22. Of the deaths recorded since 2017, 5 happened in police custody and 2 were the result of road traffic accidents involving police and Hampshire Constabulary. Was also involved in a road accident that happened after contact with Thames Valley. There were also 9 apparent suicides, which happened after police contact. A further 11 deaths that involved Hampshire Constabulary occurred during other incidents that the IOPC has investigated, which can include police helping medical staff to restrain someone, or if officer called to an incident that ultimately results in a fatality. Another police force was also involved in one of these incidents. The organisation warns that as the figures include deaths that it has investigated, they may not cover every death that has occurred after police contact.
20 years of free mental health help. A charity providing mental health support for young people in the city got together to celebrate how far it had come. Winchester Youth Counselling, WYC, has been providing free mental health counselling in the city for 20 years. The team marked the occasion on Friday, September the 16th, at the Open House Deli, with around 50 current and past staff members and trustees in attendance. The service has expanded from 3 or 4 counsellors to a growing team of 25 of staff helping to tackle the never-ending waiting list. Demand continues to steadily increase, and with other services overwhelmed with clients, more and more young people are turning to the free charity based in Winchester Centre. Founder Jill Guppy initially set up WYC due to concerns that young people could only receive 6 sessions of counselling or couldn't afford any at all. She said, "We knew this wasn't adequate for the majority of young people, and we wanted to have a place where they could come and access longer-term support. The project has grown because mental health support needed for young people has just shot up, and all the other services have been totally overwhelmed. So I think a lot of young people have drifted our way because they've got nowhere else to go." The counselling service supports young people aged 11 to 25 with 50-minute in-person sessions once a week and no predetermined end. As well as a one-to-one counselling, WYC provides walks with counsellors in nature, nature therapy, relaxation technique sessions, consultancy for parents, and a weekly wellbeing group. Clinic lead Marta Shepherd said, "The majority of our clients come from parent referral, with about 80% of the people we see being under 18. To mark the 20th anniversary, the team enjoyed a cake party and speech from founder Jill Guppy. Marta added, "It was important to celebrate the occasion to acknowledge what charity has achieved over the year and to get the team together and make them feel like they're part of something bigger." The Winchester Youth Counselling currently supports around 200 clients with one-to-one counselling, while the waiting list continues to expand. The charity accepts referrals from schools, social workers, GPs, child and adolescent mental health services, CAMHS, as well as self-referrals. For more information, go to winchesteryouthcounselling.org.
And a rather sad reflection on our current situation. Counsellors not selected. No councillors from Winchester City Council, Tess Valley Borough Council or Hampshire County Council have been shortlisted for the Councillor Awards 2022. Running for the 13th year across England and Wales and the 5th year in Scotland, the National Awards celebrate the vital work of civic chiefs. Categories include Community Champion and Leader of the Year. Nominees from authorities such as the Worcester City Council, Derbyshire County Council, and Brighton and Hove City Council will be at the awards ceremony in Bath next month. However, they won't be joined by anyone from Hampshire.
Hampshire Care Company declared 5-star employer. Hampshire Home Care Company has been declared a 5-star employer and is looking to take on 20 new staff. Home Instead, Central Hampshire, which is based in Alresford, has been commended by its employees due to factors such as top quality training opportunities and supportive leadership. All staff were invited to take part in an anonymous survey by independent employee engagement experts, WorkBuzz. Bosses said they were delighted to have received an impressive score of 94, a rating that few companies achieve. Some 96% of care professionals said they are proud to work for home instead, while 98% said their job gives them the opportunity to learn and develop new skills. Buoyed by the glowing feedback, Jan Gapper, who owns the company, is calling for more people to come on board and join the team. There are currently 20 care professional vacancies on offer for people who want to begin further a career in care. She said having care professionals who are supported, valued and satisfied in their roles is a priority for us. And there's a very nice picture of six of them smiling, sitting happily in their, actually they've got sort of uniforms, with their award. Well done them.
Village Pub's link with comedian's forefather. Excuse me. A 19th century Hampshire village pub played a starring role in the return of one of ITV's hit shows. The Northbrook Arms in East Stratton proved an unlikely link between London-born comedian Rob Beckett and Hampshire as an on-screen funny man set off on a quest to unearth the secrets of his past in the broadcaster's popular programme DNA Journey. Joined by fellow comedian and best friend Ramesh Ranganathan, the voice of Celebs Go Dating and star of panel shows 8 out of 10 Cats embarked on a road trip to chuckle his way up his family tree using a mix of DNA and genealogy, meeting relatives and ancestors he never knew existed along the way. The episode aired on Thursday, September the 29th at 9 p.m, some 2 years after it was originally filmed. Staff and friends gathered in the function room of the quaint Stratton Lane watering hole for its long-awaited national TV debut. Adam Shankly, who owns the pub with his wife Kate, said, "We were contacted by Voltage TV, the production company, back in 2020, and we didn't actually know who it was that was coming or what it was for. We just got told that they were coming to do some filming, and being quite a sleepy pub, we just said, yes. It wasn't until the actual night that they turned up. We found out that it was Rob and Ramesh. They said that it would be for high-profile celebrities, but they definitely exceeded expectations." Rob started his journey on the show in Winchester, where he discovered his links to the city. A local historian unearthed records of Frederick Beckett, his great-great-grandfather, who grew up right in the heart of the town alongside 15 other siblings. Rob said, "I've always liked Winchester. I've got friends down here and I've done a few gigs here too." Having grown up in Winchester the day it was plagued by poverty, Rob discovered Frederick lost 5 of his family members by the time he was just 16. From there, he decided to up sticks and moved to East Stratton, where he started working as a servant in the Northbrook Arms. Crews visited the pub for 2 separate days of filming as Frederick's affinity with the village and the boozer evolved. After learning of the poignant role played by his great-great-grandfather's escape from his formerly troubled life, Rob joked, "I'm going to have to buy this now, aren't I?" Mr. Shankly took over the pub in April 2019, a month before the pandemic hit and the venues were forced to close, and he revealed Rob has since played a vital role in helping him and his wife navigate their business through a difficult period. He introduced a couple of local comedians, Paul McCaffrey, helping them form a connection which Mr. Shankly described as game-changing. And there's a picture of Rob and Ramesh and Adam Shankly outside the Northbrook Arms. And there's another one, the family and friends gathering to watch the episode in their function room.
And tributes have been paid to a soldier after a fatal collision. Police have confirmed the name of the man who died following a collision in Headbourne Worthy. The collision, which happened on Down Farm Lane just after 2:10 p.m. on Sunday, September the 18th, involved a pedestrian and a black BMW. The pedestrian, Robert Myers, 39, from Kilkenny, Ireland, was taken to Southampton General Hospital, where he died of his injuries on Tuesday, September the 21st. Private Robert Myers was a member of the Royal Logistics Corps based at Worthy Down near Winchester. His family, who are being supported by specialist officers, have paid tribute to him following his death. They said, "Son, brother, friend, comrade, Robert is greatly missed by those who knew and loved him. In life, Robert pursued new opportunities and found his happiness and fulfillment. In death, Robert gave the greatest gift, a chance at life, to four people through organ donation." Investigations into the exact circumstance of the collision are ongoing. Police Sergeant Spencer Ragg of the Police of the Roads Policing Unit said, "There was a motocross event nearby at the time of this incident, and I am appealing to anyone who witnessed the collision but may have left prior to police arrival to come forward." And it's accompanied by a couple of photographs of Private Robert Myers.
Family Brewery celebrates 10-year anniversary. An independent, family-run Winchester brewery has celebrated its 10-year anniversary by organising a party in the actual brew house. The event, which took place on Saturday, September 24th, was attended by a mix of loyal customers, publicans and friends, as well as those who had never been to the brewery before. Standing among the vats, casks and bottles at its Winnell base, invitees were offered a drink of Alfred's trademark Saxon Bronze, Dombock or lemonade, as well as an array of snacks. Those new to Alfred's were given a tour of the premises, learnt the science behind the brewing and also sampled the malt that goes into making the products. As previously reported by the Chronicle, the brewery estimates it has brewed 1,260,000 pints in the last decade. Reflecting on 10 years of business, brewer Steve Haig said, "The last 10 years have flown by, from our humble beginnings in a tin pot brewery to the shiny stainless steel you see today." And there's a photograph, presumably, of Steve Haig with his family, wife, teenage daughter, pre-teen son, I would say, looking rather suspicious about the whole thing, but a good family picture anyway. Well done them.
And that's all we have for you this week. Please return the memory stick in the plastic wallet as soon as you've finished with it. Thanks to this week's editors and to all the other volunteers who prepare, copy and dispatch our recordings to you. And it's goodbye from us. Nikki?
Goodbye.
Andrew?
Goodbye.
And Norma?
Goodbye.
And me, Noel Thorpe-Tracy. I hope you stay safe and well. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.